shift over this way. My paper is actually quite an interesting follow-on in a way, or complement to the papers that preceded, particularly in relation to resistance and in relation to this question of class and working class and gender, because I'm going to talk about male working class cultural production. I am coming from this from a starting point of aesthetics or art in the first place. I'm a sociologist, an urban sociologist, and I was mainly interested in actually labor history and the politics of different port cities. This is part of a contribution within a larger body of work about port cities. And actually what happened in terms of my discovery of the aesthetic is really through something that emerged in my field research about where working class politics, if you want to accept that kind of term, had basically moved. And I found, to my surprise, that it had actually in some ways moved towards an aesthetic appreciation. So I'm going to start with the opening of my paper, reading a little bit of it, and then I'll move on because it's quite a long paper, just to draw you in to the scene in Liverpool. So here we have a bar named the Casa with a bright red star as its emblem, which is located in a 19th century red brick terraced building on Hope Street in Liverpool, if any of you have been there. On first glance, if you're walking along, it looks like an ordinary bar. It has a menu for food and beer on a signboard at the entrance, a notice advertising football screenings. But if you look a little closer, if you go in there on Friday afternoon in particular, when all the sacked dock workers hang out, you will realize that this Casa is no ordinary bar. I would argue that it is the hub of an alternative form of political and cultural resistance to top-down, culture-led urban regeneration, which is happening very much in the city and many cities around the UK and internationally, in Liverpool most recently with the European Capital of Culture, to neoliberal governance and to changing conditions of work and urban life in Liverpool. So this place, CASA, stands for Community Advice Service Agency. It's a bar and a community charity that was founded by the sacked dock workers, that's what they call themselves, because they were sacked, in the aftermath of the Liverpool Dockers strike, which was between 1995 and 1998. The bar downstairs is, which you see here, is the cash cow. So this operates basically as a bar. It makes money, and it's also a meeting place for people who are sympathetic to the struggle of the sacked dock workers, their many supporters, and other people within the community. And then the charity is upstairs with those windows you see up there. And that's run primarily by two of the founding members of this. On a voluntary basis, these are some of the leading sacked dock workers. So just to give you a little bit of background to the strike, because maybe not everybody has heard about it, the Liverpool Dockers strike was one of the longest strikes in British labor history. It had a very public campaign of the 500 sacked dock workers, which is the entire labor force, employed on the docks in 1995. And I won't go into the details of why they were all sacked. It was basically an act of solidarity with one or with four members, junior members of the dockers who had a dispute and everyone refused to cross the picket line. They were all sacked in this sort of neoliberal restructuring thing about trying to get rid of the dockers. I mean, that's not entirely what this paper is about. That's the subject of another chapter, but that's the context for the creation of this bar and this charity. And they had this massive campaign. If you were in Britain at the time, which I wasn't, you would have seen it all around the media, the news. There was international support. There were very prominent politicians, celebrities, artists, footballers, everyone around the world, dockers. And this was a very long strike. They held out and marched and did all kinds of stuff within the community for three full years before they finally gave up. And so this is the legacy, this institution is the legacy of that place. It acts as I argue later, a form of living memory of this strike and all that the Dockers community represented. It takes on a community activist role, so it offers support for dock workers and their families within the trade union movement, and it also runs worker education programs and cultural activities. So that's the focus of my research for this particular paper. So what I did is I did ethnographic or pseudo-ethnographic qualitative fieldwork, in the sense that I wasn't, you know, there for years on end. I've gone in and out of the field, and I could never properly be a participant. But I chatted with people, so it was sort of ethnographic in the sense of hanging out in the pub and talking to people in a sort of a stereotypical way, as you might see sociologists doing their research. So what I found in my discussions with a number of these former dock workers, so not just the dock workers themselves, but also their whole milieu, people who supported their campaign and remain connected to the struggle, was this really interesting shift in the ground of the struggle, in a way, towards the cultural sphere. So I found a number of these artists, or these working class people, I put that in sort of scare quotes in that it's problematic as a term, but I'm using it anyway, had turned into the artistic and cultural fields. So some of them had become painters. Many of them had produced anywhere ranging from amateur to sort of more professional documentary films, had taken to poetry, script writing, all this kind of interesting stuff going on. They were all, by and large, men, except for a little bit of co-production and some writing with women, because, as I'll go on further, this is a very much a male space. So I argue here, and also taking up Rancière to an extent, but critically, that the cultural production here could be seen as a form of political resistance, albeit a contradictory one, which reflects working class values, ideas, and politics. So here, this is quite an ambitious paper in a way, because I'm trying to actually be quite theoretical as well, showing how what I've discovered in this context actually resonates with or engages with certain theories around culture and class. And I'm coming at it from some of the dominant perspectives within sociology, which are very much less Rancière, although Rancière to some extent, but Bourdieu is one of the big benchmarks around theories of aesthetics and cultural production. And the former papers also show this, that obviously art isn't only in the sphere of like the high class, the rich, the elite, art for art's sake kind of idiom that was talked about before. And working class isn't only popular and sort of in this sort of it can be much more intellectual and much more than what Bourdieu sort of partitioned it off as, in a way. So I'm engaging with that as not necessarily that productive in terms of thinking about this form of art. I'm also engaging critically, and it's very easy to be critical about Richard Florida with his concept of the creative class. And this is coming very much from the regeneration literature, which says basically, here's a model to regenerate your cities, bring in the sort of bohemian creative types, IT people, designers, knowledge workers, the gay and lesbian groups who have lots of money and disposable income, bring them into a center, that will revitalize the city, it'll become more tolerant, more diverse. And this has sort of been very, very popular within cultural regeneration. And so here, it's a particular vision of the creative class that I find problematic, this idea that it's not so much about elites, but it is about a very particular idea of class, which the working class or these sort of other groups don't have access to in the same way. I do take up and follow the broad spirit in this session of Jean Rancière's idea of politics of aesthetics, of dissensus, and also some of my colleagues introduced to me his Proletarian Nights, which talks about worker poets in the 19th century France, laboring away in the evenings on their poetry and having visions outside of the slavery of work, in a way. So I do take up his ideas in the form that I do think that what I'm starting to see here in these working class sort of cultural resistance movements can be seen in that way, possibly as a form of dissensus or as a kind of politics of aesthetics. But I don't think it's entirely emancipatory, nor do I think in Rancière, I mean, he avoids the idea of class in a way that he thinks we can move beyond it. And, you know, these worker poets, my worker poets in Liverpool, are very much engaged in a discourse, and centrally that is about class and working class identity. So here I'm following on one of Arendt's critiques as well, though not deeply, but just using it as an opening, of the contradictions within Marxist ideas of labor. And that is, I mean, again, kind of going back to a critique of Bourdieu, but this, she points out this idea that on the one hand, and she's being actually quite friendly to Marx, on the one hand, Marxists want an ultimate emancipation from labor. And that's, I think, in a way, what Rancière is getting at. We shouldn't just be slaves to the sort of value of labor in itself. But then she says, well, at the same time, in practice, on the ground, Marxists are only thinking that the most productive thing is labor. And so that's a contradiction that I kind of wanted to explore and saw emerging in different ways from these worker quotes and their ideas and discourses. And then finally, I want to insert my sociological lens and engage with that with some authors who have written extensively on some of the contradictions and ambivalences in working class identities, which I won't go into in detail at this point. So in terms of the key themes that are emerging across these cases, it's this idea of a disruption in this dominant, these dominant ideas I was talking about. And I think the ways in which it differs from, you know, this idea of art for art's sake or these sort of inequalities in a way is that there is an emphasis in this sort of emancipatory sense on co-production, on working together with a community, on self-teaching, and on these working class values such as international solidarity, trade unionism. But on the other hand, there's very much this idea of sort of exclusivity. I mean, it's a purely male sphere, and it's hearkening back to rather nostalgic ideas about the way that labor worked, which were very exclusionary in terms of race as well. There were no, although there were many black people in some of the first, you know, migrant communities in Liverpool, it was a white dock workforce. But I do think that in a way, the way that the CASA is moving forward, you can see that they are trying to be reflexive about that past and open to other communities. So I'll just talk about a few of these artistic things to kind of give you a sampling. So the first, this is probably the most sort of flagship production of the CASA. You can find this, you know, on video stores or online. Dockers, a 1999 film about the dock struggle. Very moving. They used, you know, Chrissy Rock, which is a big name Liverpool actress. And this was co-written and co-produced by an adult worker education class, which was taking place inside the CASA. And these were basically mainly dispossessed people who were sap dock workers in the immediate aftermath of the strike, and their partners, wives, anyone who was sort of traumatized. And they drew on their experiences, and together with the renowned local playwright Jimmy McGovern and Irvine Walsh of Trainspotting, brought together and co-wrote and were, you know, sufficiently acknowledged within the credits and intellectual property and whatnot of the film. And so this, it's a really great film if you want to learn about the Liverpool Dockers strike. So I'm just going to flash through some more of these figures. This is what Steve Higginson was one of the most interesting ones in terms of thinking about these contradictions of labor in a way. He's a former postal worker, a trade union official, and very much involved in the organizing of this strike and campaigning. So he's quit his job in the postal service, and he's moved on to be a full-time writer. He's written books about edgy cities, is about how distinctive port cities are. He wrote a really interesting essay with Tony Whaley on the Catholic anti-work ethic, which is all about how we shouldn't work and how work is evil, and the sort of following these ideas that, you know, loosely inspired through sort of Trotskyist ideas and also in opposition to the Protestant ideas so coming out of the Liverpudlian sectarian debate. So it is quite interesting where he was taking that journey in terms of thinking about work through his art or his writing and poetry. Then he wrote, along this theme as well, a play, Waiting for Brando, with another writer, about Liverpool merchant seamen in New York in 1953, and he was imagining that they were across the street while on the waterfront with what Marlon Brando was being screened. So this is again going to the sort of romantic discourse that they have in edgy cities about, you know, Liverpool is more like, you know, Naples or Marseille or New York than it is like any other place, which is something that I'm working on more broadly in my sort of port cities exploration. And yeah, he's done also writing with text and image going together in an exhibition about the loss of community within a deprived industrial estate on the outskirts of Liverpool. This is an interesting move in a way for somebody who is very much on the shop floor and into trade union politics, and that's, you know, what he does now, and he's very passionate about it. But he also talked to me about the creativity that workers exhibit themselves, and this was getting at his anti-work philosophy as well. And so he said, one particular area always interested me when I was a trade union official, and that was the sheer wonderfully creative ways that people found to evade work, which I always found remarkable. Any excuses to get out of work, so for instance, what would be called excessive toilet blows, going to the toilet all the time, seeking out little cubbyholes in different parts of the building to go and hide. So I'm going to move on from Steve. Steve is a good friend of David Jake, who's a local political artist, and is set up, his studio, at least when I was there, was set up across the street from the Casa. So I went over and chatted with him, with Steve Higginson as well. They worked together. He was basically the Dockers artist. He did all their banners, he did all their political program stuff. He's from Liverpool. And he's never worked as a Docker or within that, although he has a family history in that way. And that's in the Casa, you can see that there. He painted the main mural on their back wall. But he also feels a certain ambivalence about what his contribution can really be, and this relates to, well, what can really be done about art as a, you know, form of dissensus. He said, we were kind of useful, but I can't claim to have been a big influence in the area, you know. I was a painter then, working by myself. If there was anything you could do, you know, it's like, I feel like it's one of those things, you know, I supported them. I think if I could have been of use to them, I suppose it's more since they set up across the road, i.e. the Casa, and you can see a few examples on the walls of my work. You feel quite inadequate as an artist at times. So he, as a political artist, really does feel the limitations of where that can take him in relation to that struggle. So just a few, I already discussed this idea of the Casa as a living museum. So just the entire design of the place, the way they've redone the bar to make it look like a Dockers bar, and they've got all kinds of sort of, every bit of memorabilia is all from the strike. This is their original Never Cross a Picket Line, 500 sack dock workers from that strike. These are all the messages of support along their back wall from actually quite prominent celebrities. And this is the famous Robbie Fowler Liverpool flashing us Dockers, like mocked up Dockers with Calvin Klein during a football match in which he got disciplined for. So that was him showing his support. So as I mentioned, there are some limitations, some serious limitations, in terms of conceiving them of this act or these acts as real forms of dissensus or politics of aesthetics. There's this lack of social inclusion. There are paradoxical parallels in terms of working class cultural production in Liverpool between, on the one hand, and this is something that I go into more detail in the paper, but there's this idea that working class identity that Savage, the sociologist Savage, pointed out, which is that there's this particular understanding of the autonomous male individual within a lot of these, well, British working class politics. But there's an interesting kind of correlation between that, I think, and then this discourse within which Bourdieu separates as being an autonomous, independent sphere of the restricted field of art for art's sake. So I thought it was kind of interesting and might suggest why there might be an affinity between like the working class guys and then going into this other autonomous field. And it also relates to their discourse about their work as well, about how dockers actually weren't working to clock time. They were a bit more autonomous and truculent than other types of workers. And as I had mentioned before as well, there's this question like, well, this is the way it was in the past. Of course, we can't return to this sort of male, traditional breadwinner model and this sort of exclusive thing. So what potential does it have in terms of moving forward? Does it have potential? And I think in terms of the casta in particular, the way they've moved on, there are some ways in which it is productive. I'll just conclude. So, as I mentioned, these emphases on co-production and collaboration. Also, this real embeddedness within the community. So it's not just individuals who are, they're a working class person putting something out there and it's getting, into some magazine or into some exhibition. They're working together within the community. They're very much explicitly affirming their working class identities and political struggles within their art. So it is very much something that's moved for them to a serious domain. And they are attempting, and I haven't gone into detail about this, through their work of this charity or this CASA on a volunteer basis, to really reach out to wider communities beyond those which would have been excluded from their original labor background. Thank you.
Thank you.